Chapter 2, A Call to India. In her student days, Edith Brown was asked to consider entering the Deaconess Order, but her reply was, "I should find it difficult to be sufficiently obedient." Back of this statement lay a strong heritage of faith, courage, and independent action. This heritage was passed on to her by a line of forebears who had experienced persecution for conscience' sake. They had lived a strictly disciplined Christian life as a part of the European and English Pietist movement. On her mother's side, Edith Brown could trace her ancestries back to the Huguenots in the period of Protestant persecution in France. In this line of descent, her great-great-great-grandfather was the Reverend Peter Pettit, M.A., who served as vicar of Royston about 1750. He was noted as a great Hebrew scholar of that day, and the Hebrew grammar which he produced was widely used. Her mother's father came more directly from the continent. He was brought up in a strict, aristocratic Christian family, where everything was cherished as a gift from God. It was into this background that Edith Mary Brown was born on March 24, 1864, in Whitehaven, England. Her family was much respected in the local society, for her father, George Whiteman Brown, was manager of the Bank of Whitehaven. It was an interesting family of six children with a wide age span of over 20 years. Edith had two sisters, one younger and one older. She also had two stepsisters and one stepbrother. Her father and mother were active members of the Plymouth Brethren, and from their earliest days, the children accompanied their parents to the Sunday meetings. Both parents contributed to the formation of Edith's character. From her mother, she inherited her rigid spiritual discipline. From her father, she received a natural love for mathematics and business management, which was to stand her in good stead. The years until she was seven were very happy ones. The Browns lived as a happy, harmonious family, closely knit in their relationship with one another and with their parents. Yet at the very early age of three, Edith demonstrated a definite spirit of independence which was to epitomize her character and conduct in future events. She had been playing alone in the nursery upstairs when she decided she wanted to join the others downstairs. Her parents were amazed as they saw this child slowly making her way, unaided, down the stairs. On each step, she would stop and say in triumph, "All alone, all alone." A concern for others was an integral part of the home and church training. The children frequently visited the inmates of the workhouse, and as Christians, at Christmas they took great joy in distributing Cumberland rum butter to these people, as well as to the patients in the hospital. The family divided its time between the home in Whitehaven and their country cottage just 4 miles outside Keswick. This latter place was ideally situated in the Lake District, surrounded by rolling hills and lakes, with a superb view of distant mountains. Here the children spent the greater part of their time outdoors, and during that period something was grafted into the soul of Edith Brown which could never be erased, a deep and abiding love for the scenic beauty of Cumberland. Years later, when she was confronted by the majestic grandeur of the Himalayas, she wrote, "We are on top of one mountain and see some low hills and plains on one side, but on the other, nothing but range after range as far as we can see. It has not yet been clear enough to see the snow range, which is the furthest ever visible. The sunsets are glorious, and the lights on the hills just wonderful. It is larger and grander, but not so really lovely as Cumberland." The call of Keswick would never leave her. During her student years, it was an anticipated delight to come back to the familiar countryside and participate in the internationally famous Keswick Convention. Many years later in India, she recorded that the greatest joy of her furlough was always the return to the beauty and quiet of Cumberland and the opportunity for participation in the convention. Two things marked a turning point in Edith Brown's life when she was 8 years old. The first was the unexpected and untimely death of her father. He had had a serious compound fracture, which proved to be fatal. In a short time, the family found its way of life changed. Edith had been very fond of her father. Now his death suddenly made heaven seem very real and very close to her. One of her older sisters conducted a Sunday school for them and for a number of other young friends who came to the house on Sunday afternoons. In one of these classes, the second event occurred, which marked a turning point in Edith's life. She later wrote in her diary, "On October 12, 1872, the Lord brought home to my heart the necessity for definite acceptance of His salvation. How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? And I did definitely accept Him as my Savior and Lord. This decision was the foundation and motivation for the long career which was to follow." In 1873, the sister who had taught the Sunday school class in which Edith was converted married a son of a missionary in South India. The newly married couple, Mr. and Mrs. Bowden, went out to work in the Godavari district and did not return home for 40 years. The subsequent letters from this sister made the lasting impression on Edith's mind. She read of the millions of Indian women who lived behind the veil of Purdah, for whom no medical care was available because no man doctor might enter the zanana, the women's section of a household. She was told of the customs which bound women so that they were no more than some man's chattel or property. She learned of the millions who poured out their hearts in prayer, making sacrifices to gods and goddesses, but remaining unsatisfied and unanswered. These stories built up in her a determination to go to India and tell these women about Jesus and share with them the joy and security she had found in Him. In high school, her natural love for mathematics was evident. She specialized in mathematics and drawing in a course leading to the junior and senior Cambridge certificates. So outstanding was her work on the senior Cambridge that she was offered a scholarship to Girton College, Cambridge. There was great excitement in the family when the first announcement of the scholarship was received. It meant that she would leave the family circle and go off into a strange new world. The fact that Girton College was exclusively for women did make a difference. However, the girls would still have to attend university lectures alongside men students. Many of the folk who belonged to the Plymouth Brethren criticized the new freedom being offered to women in the rapidly expanding field of education. But Edith determined that she would go to Girton, even though much influence was exerted to guide her into other channels. She had decided that God wanted her in India, and she prayed for guidance to follow His will for her life. As a consequence, she decided to become a doctor, for here was one of the greatest needs of India. So she felt that she should take the best possible course to prepare her for this goal. Some of her friends, while encouraging her to this very worthwhile goal, did not feel that she should enter the modern and aggressive environment of Girton. She should go to some institution of a more conservative character, where all her interests would be protected. Accordingly, they suggested that she go to Mildmay and take the training for the Mildmay Deaconess Order. Edith Brown, by some deep instinct, knew that this was not for her. Hers was not a nature which took easily to following orders. She would rather give them. She did not feel it was her role to go around in quiet humility, wearing bonnet and veil, emulating the saintliness of other deaconesses in the order, and quietly accepting the discipline handed down by the deaconess in charge. So in 1882, she went to school at Girton in the small village on the outskirts of Cambridge. Edith Brown was following the way of a pioneer, for this was a relatively new college set in a university which had colleges dating back for hundreds of years. However, university education for women was a new and radical departure within the ancient traditions of this great institution. It was only as recently as 1881 that the Senate of Cambridge University had approved the recommendation to admit women students to the honors examinations of the university. In these examinations, they were given an authoritative record of the results in published class lists. It was thus, as a member of a pioneer class, that Edith Brown enrolled in Girton. Much thought and prayer had gone into her preparation for this important new step. She was never free from the conviction that God was calling her to India as a doctor, and this meant the surrender of herself and her own desires in His higher will. She had to make some sacrifices for this goal. The most natural and most enjoyable course for her to take at Girton would have been mathematics. However, she knew that this was not laying the best foundation for a subsequent medical career. She accordingly decided to lay aside her first love and to enroll in science. Thus, she would be ensured of a good preparation for entry into medical school. It was typical of Edith Brown that, though just 18 years of age, she entered her university studies with discipline and a determination that nothing would be allowed to interfere with her work. Other students went to the theater and concerts. They played tennis and enjoyed parties with friends, but this was not the life for her. She did have a circle of friends who played an important part in her life and gave extra enjoyment to those years. She wrote, "The life at Girton is a very happy memory. There was a strong group of Christians who met for fellowship and united prayer." She enjoyed participating in children's special service mission meetings and entering into discussions with other students at cocoa parties. She described one of other memorable activity of those days. "I enjoyed chapels in Cambridge and Prince George," later King George V, "was often present and only distinguishable by wearing an undergraduate gown of silk." The women science students of Girton College had to make a 3-mile trip into Cambridge every day to attend the university's science lectures and practical classes. Edith knew it was a rare privilege to have her classes in general physiology taught by one of the outstanding teachers, Professor Foster. He felt that he should leave the special sections to the younger lecturers, feeling that the more elementary course needed his personal attention. Just prior to leaving her home for college, Edith Brown developed a physical weakness which threatened to undermine all her plans for the future. Fearing the debilitating effects of tuberculosis, the doctors advised her to spend some time in comparative ease before undertaking a physically demanding university course. She was strictly ordered not to study at night, but it is characteristic of her that she used the situation of adversity to establish a new and important habit. She began to go to bed early and get up every morning at 4 o'clock. This habit was of tremendous benefit to her in later years when she was working in the season of extreme heat. The physical weakness did not leave her, however, and for a period of 3 months at Girton, she lost the use of her voice. This difficulty did not impair her studies in any way, and she felt that the power of united prayer was seen when her voice returned, and she never again was bothered by that particular problem. One day in May, 1885, she went with a party to visit the cathedral at Ely for a day's outing. Everyone was relaxed because they had finished their final examinations the previous day. She remarked that it had been a memorable day for her, and she had enjoyed the beauty of the cathedral, but the day was to be even more memorable. On the way back, they all went over to the Senate House, where the examination results were posted on the door. Here, to her great joy, Edith found her name posted with second-class honors in science. Now a time of testing came. She was already established as a very fine mathematician. The Cambridge results marked her as one with a keen scientific mind. Enticing offers were made to her for teaching posts and in science laboratories. She could indeed find a brilliant career in one of several professions if she so desired. Her excellence of intellect had been recognized. What was to be her course? Again, her diary tells us of divine intervention. "At this time, when this important decision had to be made, my morning reading in Jeremiah gave me a clear and direct message, which has helped me too at other times of decision. Seekest thou great things for thyself? Seek them not." Jeremiah 45:5. "And I have realized the joy and peace of putting the Lord and His service first, and leaving all the rest to him. The decision had thus been handed down to her. She would secure a medical training which would fit her for service in India. But this would be a Herculean task. At least £600 would be required for the medical course on even the most economical level. It would be very slow work indeed. She contracted to teach at Exeter High School as science mistress, and so in September 1885, a new chapter opened in her life. Again, she realized that it was going to be very good preparation for the future.